A much-feared but widely anticipated day arrived yesterday in Michigan's largest city. Officials filed a 16-page bankruptcy petition on behalf of the city of Detroit in U.S. court. With the action, Detroit becomes the largest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history. Governor Rick Snyder authorized the filing after efforts by state-appointed emergency manager Kevin Orr failed to satisfy numerous creditors. According to reports, the city owes as many as 100,000 creditors as much as $20 billion. Here to help us understand what's happening and all of its various impacts, reporter John Gallagher of the Detroit Free Press. John, welcome back to Current State.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
And in the studio, we welcome Eric Scorsone, Michigan State University Professor of State and Local Public Finance. Eric, welcome back.
Good morning.
John Gallagher, talk to us about what you've seen and heard since this news broke yesterday, and in particular, what ordinary residents of Detroit are saying.
Yeah, well, everyone, I think, is pretty shocked, even though, as you mentioned, this was viewed as inevitable. And a lot of the business leaders here are saying this is going to be necessary surgery, and, you know, it will right the ship and we'll come out okay on the other end of this at some point. But obviously people are shocked, and anyone who relies on the city of Detroit for a pension or for a health care, all the retirees, municipal retirees, they're very worried about, close to panic, I think, is accurate about what's going to happen to their pensions and health care. And Wall Street people are very upset because they understand they're going to get stiffed on a lot of their investments that they when they bought Detroit bonds. So there's a range of reaction, but shock and dismay, I think, is probably the good way to put it.
Eric Scorsone, what do you take from the filing? What's on your short list of impacts from this filing yesterday?
Well, first of all, we'll have to see if the municipal bond market raises the cost of borrowing for other Michigan cities and communities. I mean, that's going to be the real question. Does a place like Flint now or Lansing, is it going to cost more to borrow money because there's a fear other Michigan municipalities may face the same problems?
A domino effect?
Yeah,
in a way.
Exactly. And that's really the question we'll see over the next few days with the bond markets. I think the other issue is, you know, as John pointed out, for employees and retirees, there's absolutely huge impacts that we won't know for quite a while, but that's going to be a big part of the story as well.
Eric, legally, remind us what a bankruptcy filing does. What changes now?
Well, essentially there's a stay, which means that the city doesn't have to pay anyone and no one can sue them. Now, the city is going to have to prove to the judge they are actually insolvent. And I know that sounds a little bit like, well, aren't they obviously insolvent? But legally, it's a very technical issue about what money does the city have. And this is where things like the DIA come into play, because the creditors are going to argue you can sell the art, you can sell assets, you can raise taxes, you can get the money, you don't need bankruptcy. And this is going to be a very protracted battle because we've seen this in other cities around the country that have filed for bankruptcy.
John Gallagher, what does the filing change for city residents? Let's assume a city resident, there are many of them, I'm sure, who are not former employees of the city necessarily. How does this impact them?
Well, what Kevin Orr and the governor and everyone else is saying is that it should not have any impact on day-to-day operations in the city, because the city gets to keep its current revenue and apply it to current services as it does now. So, the line is that this will be more or less invisible for city workers. However, or I'm sorry, for city residents. The problem, of course, is that services in Detroit are fairly minimal as it is. There's huge amounts of streetlights that don't work. 911 response is spotty. And so on. And so to the extent that we have services now, they'll continue more or less without any change. So the immediate impact should not be apparent in terms of services. It'll be more in things like municipal bond prices.
Eric Scorsone, you alluded to this a minute ago. As far as you know, what kind of legal developments might be happening in the coming weeks and months?
Well, there are going to be a lot of filings from creditors trying to block the city and force them out of bankruptcy because, you know, as you said, they don't want to be here. And so they're going to provide evidence that, well, no, the city has revenues. It can make more reductions in costs. It can raise the income tax back to 3% or something like this, or sell different assets to raise these revenues. And so we'll see a long protracted battle because each creditor may take a different position on this. And there's, as you said, over 100,000. And so I think this is going to be a big part of the story of, you know, from the perspective of a judge, is Detroit truly insolvent? Because if it has to prove that before we can go to the next phase of the trial, which would be the actual plan that would resolve the issue.
John Gallagher, I'm curious, was there a point when you felt emergency manager Orr might get enough concessions from enough creditors that Chapter 9 might be avoided, or have you largely anticipated this?
I think we've anticipated this for weeks, several weeks, and it seemed more than likely when he came on board a couple of months ago. There was always a chance that he might have gotten enough concessions from different people, but I think most of us gave that up some weeks ago, and so it was really a matter of, you know, when and not if.
You suggested a minute ago, John, that Detroit City Services will continue at least roughly along the lines that they have so far. They've been notoriously poor for a long time. Do the people of Detroit anticipate services will take a dip, or are they generally confident that they will at least stay where they are?
Well, I think that you probably get a range of reactions. I think that I'm a resident in the city, and I would expect they'd stay more or less where they are for a bit. You know, there's other things happening too. We have a new police chief we just hired who is vowing to improve response times and so on. We have a mayoral election this fall, which will have some impact. We don't know what exactly. You know, downtown and midtown are redeveloping pretty rapidly here, which is a positive step. So you've got a lot of things happening at the same time. And the bankruptcy, you know, hopefully, I mean, the long term, hopefully will be a positive thing to straighten out the city's books, but short term is going to be pretty painful for a lot of people.
John, this is a huge story. Your paper broke. What was it like in the newsroom yesterday leading up to and after breaking the story?
Well, we had inklings over the last couple of days that the bankruptcy filing was going to come as early as Friday, as today. And then, so we posted a story, I think, yesterday around midday saying it was going to happen on Friday. And then suddenly it happened yesterday afternoon, because I think Kevin Orr wanted to get into the courthouse ahead of everybody else, people who were trying to block him from filing. So it was pretty intense. But, you know, we've got a good staff here, and we all hands on deck. And, you know, a lot of people worked pretty late last night.
Which angles of this story will you be paying most attention to here in the short-term future?
Well, my personal beat on the business beat, I'll be looking at all the business reaction and the Wall Street muni prices and, you know, bond prices and trying to get a sense of what this is going to mean for things like, you know, transportation projects, the M1 rail, the Cobo Center expansion, tourism for the city. I mean, all those kinds of, you know, I guess all the economic spinoffs of this.
John Gallagher of the Detroit Free Press, we thank you very much for your time on what I'm sure has been a stimulating time at the Detroit Free Press. We're going to let you get back to work. Good luck. Thank you
very much, guys. Bye-bye.
And Rick Pluta of the Michigan Public Radio Network joins Eric Scorsone and me now to continue this conversation. Hi, Rick. Thank you for coming in. You were downstairs at WKAR-TV while the governor was giving interviews to all the TV stations.
One floor below where we are right now.
That's right. We're on two. That's the TV station's on one. And you spoke with the governor as well. Where is he on this right now?
Well, obviously, he authorized the bankruptcy filing that he had to. And, you know, as John Gallagher just pointed out, it seemed pretty evident probably weeks ago that we were headed in this direction when the creditors wouldn't agree to, you know, what were really big concessions. And so, as he said, it became a matter of when, not if, and it looks like the state made some decisions, that the state and the emergency manager made some decisions to move quickly before public employee unions could try to do some things to maybe stand in the way of that. Now, going forward on this, you know, obviously, you know, one of the things we've got to find out is where actually the bankruptcy proceedings are going to be held. I think a lot of us are assuming it's going to be in Detroit, but it could actually be in a city in another state even. And you know, maybe the creditors would want to take it there. But wherever it is, other local governments here in Michigan, public employee unions, and legislators are going to be watching what happens in Detroit, because that could very well serve as a template for how other challenged local governments deal with their retiree legacy costs, which what make up the biggest part of Detroit's debt burden.
Eric Scorsone, would you mind responding to that? I'm curious what you make of that.
No, Rick's absolutely right. I mean, whether other cities go into bankruptcy or not, they all face a lot of the same problems on a different scale. But Flint, Lansing, and Grand Rapids, other cities in Michigan have exactly the same issue Detroit has. And I think the question is, you know, are other places, other unions going to say, wow, we better do something because we don't want to end up in this same place? You know, do we make concessions? Do we make changes to pension plans and health care plans so that we don't end up anywhere near this? Because this is going to have implications for every city in Michigan, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're looking at what it might do to municipal credit now that the governor has authorized one bankruptcy. Will the marketplace, and the marketplace is going to do whatever the marketplace is going to do.
That's what Eric pointed out a minute ago. It's going to be very interesting to watch bond rates in the aftermath
of the Detroit fire. You know, the state treasurer, Andy Dillon, says at least they shouldn't, that Detroit is such a unique situation that it shouldn't be held against other communities. But will other communities be held accountable for what's happening in Detroit? You know, as Eric was just mentioning, will public employee unions, having stared death in the face, agree to dismemberment to avoid a similar thing happening to pensions in other places, that this is going to ripple out? And I was talking a few weeks ago to the original sponsor in the legislature of Michigan's emergency manager law, and he thinks that this could serve as a template not for just other communities in Michigan, but we will probably see what happens there play out in courtrooms and legislatures and city halls all across the country.
What is the buzz at the legislature on this? How many legislators have responded explicitly to the Detroit filing so far?
They're politicians. They can't not talk. that we've seen people post about how tragic this is and how sad that it's come to this. One of the things that struck me is actually the absence of finger pointing, that the gaze seems to be resolutely forward and not complaining about these policies or that policies having brought us here. I mean, this is I've been covering Michigan government and politics for 25 years, and this is definitely one of the most serious situations I've ever witnessed.
Eric, you first mentioned the impact on municipal bond rates in the aftermath of this. Let's go a couple more items down on your short list. What else will you be watching?
Well, I mean, the big issue is the pensions, because Michigan's Constitution protects those, and if a federal judge overrules that, that has implications for every state in this country, essentially. If even a constitutional protection isn't really sacrosanct, then we see this battle playing out in California right now in Stockton, in bankruptcy. And so that means that, even for a lot of other workers around the country, maybe their pensions aren't secure anymore. There was always a perception that, public pension was a, rock solid kind of idea, and that may not be true. And again, other communities in Michigan have underfunded pensions, just like Detroit. So it's not unique. And actually, Chicago was just downgraded big time by Moody's, saying, you have huge legacy costs you're not addressing. And so it's not just, people say this is just Detroit. Detroit's a mess. Everybody knows that. This is Chicago. It's San Francisco. It's New York. They all have the same kinds of problems.
It's such a unique space that one of the reasons that municipal bonds are supposed to be such a good investment is because, unlike a private business, which can't create revenue if it's not making any money, a city typically
always has tax revenue.
Can always raise taxes. Now, what happened in the case of Detroit, and there are certainly, you know, other urban centers in Michigan that are in the same place, is that both legally the city cannot raise taxes. That I know there's this talk about, you know, maybe raising the city income tax. It would require a state law. They would have to get the legislature to approve that, a Republican-controlled legislature to approve a tax increase. They'd have to get the legislature's permission to do that. And also, as a practical matter, you know, so many taxes in Detroit are going uncollected right now, it sort of, you know, begs the question of whether that would have any practical effect.
Very interesting. Right now, we're going to shift gears slightly again. We'll say goodbye and thanks very much to MSU's Eric Scorsone for all your insights today. We appreciate it a lot.
Thank you.